with a hard stare, she said, "What's your name, Buster?" "Fletcher," he said. Magnanimously, he added, "You can call me Fletch, though, when you call me." The other reporters titched and shook their heads and otherwise expressed embarrassment at their crass colleague. After staring at him a moment, Moxie said slowly, clearly, into the cameras, "I did not kill Steve Peterman." The other reporters resumed clucking their sympathetic questions. "How long have you known Steve Peterman? Were you close?" Loudly, Fletch asked, "Ms. Mooney, were you and Steve Peterman lovers?" When she looked at Fletch this time, there was revulsion in her face. "No," she said. "Mr. Peterman and I were not lovers." "What were your relations with Peterman?" Fletch asked. Moxie hesitated just slightly. "Strictly business. Steve was my manager," she said. "He took care of my business affairs. He helped produce this film." Her eyes closed fully and she took a deep breath. "And he was my friend." Fletch thought he was doing a sufficiently surreptitious job of fading back through the crowd when he felt a hand on his arm. He turned. The short man was squinting at Fletch. He removed his hand. "Haven't seen you before," he said. "Who are you?"
"I am Fletcher, Global Cable News."
"City guy, huh? National news type."
"You got it in one."
Behind the short man, the question rang out, "Do you think the murder of Peterman had anything to do with the earlier hit-and-run incident?" Fletch couldn't hear Moxie's answer. "Listen to me, mister," the short reporter said. "We don't treat people like that around here."
"Like what?"
"That little lady," the reporter jerked his tape recorder toward the sweat-stained shirt of another reporter, "just lost her friend to death. Do you understand that? Asking her questions like you just did is just plain uncivil."
"Where are you from?" Fletch asked. "The Girl Scout Monthly?"
"St. Petersburg."
"Listen, man."
"Don't you listen, man, me."
The short man pressed his index finger against Fletch's chest.
"You get away from Ms. Mooney and you get away from this story or you'll find yourself stomped."
Fletch heard a reporter ask, "Ms. Mooney, do you believe there are people trying to stop this film from being made?" Again, Fletch did not hear her answer. To the short reporter, he said, "That would be uncivil of you."
"Don't you scoff at us, mister. You work south and you mind your manners, you hear?"
"In this business," Fletch said to the short reporter, "there is no such thing as a wrong question. There are only wrong answers." As he was leaving the lobby, Fletch heard a reporter ask,
"Ms. Mooney, have you yourself received any death threats?"
"Hey," Moxie said. She got into the front seat of the white Lincoln Continental and closed the door. "Hey." Fletch was waiting in the back seat. She had taken exactly as long with the press as he thought she would. Without air conditioning running, the car was hot, even on a gray day.
"Why are you sitting in the front seat?" Fletch asked.
"I'm a Democratic star." A few people were milling around the car, looking in.
"You believe in equity?"
"And equity believes in me. I pay my dues."
She sat sideways on the front seat and put her tanned arm along the top of the backrest.
"I may call you Fletch?"
"When you call me."
"That's a funny name. Think of all the things with which it rhymes."
"Yes," he mused. "Cannelloni, for one. Prognathus, Lasket, Checkerberry, Scantling, Pieshkov, Modulus, Gog and Magog."
"You know any other big words?"
"That's it."
"Thanks for what you did for me in there."
Moxie smiled. "Pulling the teeth of the other reporters and all those to come." "Thought there was a need for one or two clear, simple statements on the incident from you."
"Didn't I do well?"
"You did, of course."
"Steve Peterman was my friend," Moxie sort of quoted, with a sort of choke in her throat. The bastard, I could have killed him. Someone agreed with you, apparently. Outside the window nearest Fletch stood a heavy woman in a gaily printed dress. Moxie, they have to have this murder solved in a matter of hours. Why? Her face was as free of wrinkles as if she had never read a book. Moxie had read books. Why do you say that? Steve wasn't shot, like from a distance. He was stabbed in public. Steve was just dying to get on the Dan Buckley show, she drawled. There were cameras all over the place. There were cameras working the talk show. Local press were everywhere taking pictures of everything and everybody that had paint on it, whether it moved or not. Rather daring of whoever did it. And security was so tight on location, they have the names and reason for being there of everyone within yodeling distance. Good, Moxie said. Let's consider the damn thing solved. Are you sure this isn't one of Peterman's grand publicity schemes gone awry? Like the knife was just supposed to land on the stage or something? You're kidding. Steve wouldn't risk getting a spot on his slacks if he saw an orphanage on fire. Hey, Fletch said. What? Stop acting tough. She read his face. What am I doing, protecting myself? I would say so, he answered. It's not every day the guy sitting next to you gets stabbed. A person you know, someone important to you. I guess so, she sighed. I was having real problems with Steve Fletch, which is why I asked you to come down. I wanted to talk it out with somebody. I was finding it very difficult to be nice to him. Not being nice is not the same as being murderous. What? Forget it. You're fighting shock, Moxie, making like a heartless vamp. Yeah. You know it? I guess so. Sure. You and Steve were close at one time. Steve was just using me, she said quietly. Where's Marge? Is she okay? Fletch shrugged. I expect she's being taken care of. They questioned her first, Moxie said, in a car at the beach. I see. Were Steve and Marge close? I wouldn't say Steve was close to anybody but his banker. I was thinking of Marge, Fletch said. Good, Moxie said. Steve never thought of her. Her head was down and she was speaking softly. Beneath her tan, her skin had whitened. The enormity of what had happened was finally sinking into her. Phew, she said. I guess I am confused. I'm so used to people dying on stage and on camera with me, you know, of acting out my reaction. I know. Is Steve really dead? She had turned her face from him. Steve is really dead. He flicked his tongue against the side of her neck. Hang in there, Moxie. He opened the car door to get out. I'll pick you up for dinner. 8 o'clock, okay? At La Playa, she said. He had one foot on the pavement. She corkscrewed around on the front seat. Fletch? Yeah? He put his head back inside the car. Her cheeks were wet with tears. Find Freddy for me, will you? Freddy, is he here? Oh, yes. Oh, God. He's playing the attentive father these days to me, or retiring on me, or something. Let me guess which. He shouldn't be loose in public with all this going on. The murder. Is he boozing? You need to ask? There was sand on the rear rug of the Lincoln. Moxie said, I suspect all those little squiggles in his brain have finally turned their toes up in the booze. Can't blame him. They've been drowning in booze for years. Over the car's blue rug, perfect images flashed for Fletch. Frederick Mooney on stage as Willie Loman, Richard III and Lear. On film as Falstaff, as Disraeli. As Captain Bligh, as a baggy pants comic. As a decent Montana rancher turned decent politician. As Scanlon on death row. As... He was the best, Fletch said, even when he was Stinko. History, Moxie said. Where should I look? One of the joints on Bonita Beach. He drove up with us this morning. Freddy never wanders far when there's a handy bar. Fletch chuckled. The thought of Freddy makes poets of us all. See you at 8, she said. Thanks, Fletch.
Okay.
Walking back toward the police station, Fletch noticed big, blousy, wet clouds blowing in from the northwest. Chapter 5.
Okay, Fletch said to the secretary sitting at the desk between the doors marked Investigations and Chief of Police. I'll see whoever's in charge now.
The woman in the light yellow blouse looked at him as if he had just fallen from the moon. The lobby was still full of people.
Have you been called? Asked the woman who had been doing the calling.
No, Fletch said, but I'm willing to serve.
The investigations door opened, and Dan Buckley came out looking as if he had been tumble-dried. The reporters rose to him like a puff of soot. Even without smiling, there was still amiable assurance on Buckley's face.
The short reporter glared at Fletch and made a point of stepping into the space between him and Buckley.
Are you going to run the tape of this show on television?
No, no, Buckley answered. I'm turning every centimeter of tape over to the police. The police will have our complete cooperation. Such a tragedy.
A middle-aged woman with handsomely waved brown hair came through the door marked Investigations. Fletch had never seen a police shirt so well filled. Her badge lay comfortably on her left breast. She had typewritten sheets in her hand. She was about to say something to the secretary.
I'm next, Fletch informed her.
She, too, looked at Fletch as if he had just arrived from the moon.
Fletcher, he said.
She looked down her list, turned a page, looked down the list, turned another page, looked down the list.
Honey, she said, you're last.
Fletch grinned.
I bet you've been wanting to come to the end of that list.
She grinned back at him, waved the typewritten sheets at him, and said, Come on in. Going behind her desk, she said, I'm Chief of Detectives Roz Natchman.
Fletch closed the door behind him.
Sitting down at her desk, she peered into the window of her audio recorder to see how much tape was left.
Sit down, she said.
He did.
Why don't I just give you a statement, he said. Save time. Save you the bother of asking a lot of questions.
She shrugged.
Go ahead.
She pushed the record button on her tape machine.
Name's I am Fletcher.
Sitting behind her desk, hands folded in her lap, Chief of Detectives Roz Natchman looked at Fletcher's moccasins, his legs, his shorts, his tennis shirt, his arms, his neck, his face. Her smile was tolerant. That of someone about to hear a tale about fairies and witches.
I arrived at the shooting location of the film Midsummer Night's Madness on Bonita Beach at about 3:05 this afternoon. At the security gate, I showed my press credentials from Global Cable News. The security guard told me that the taping would continue until shortly before 4. He directed me to the pavilion where a bar had been set up. He said a reception for the television crew and press was planned for after the taping. I went directly to the pavilion. Only one other person was present in the pavilion all the time I was there, a woman who later identified herself to me as the wife of the deceased, Marge Peterman. She was watching on a television monitor the taping of the show. I could see at a distance, and not clearly, the actual set of the Dan Buckley show. I could also see, but not clearly, the monitor screen. In fact, I was looking at neither. I poured myself a glass of orange juice from the bar. My attention was called to the incident by Marge Peterman saying, What happened to Steve? I looked across at the set and saw that Peterman was sitting in an odd position. I stood behind Mrs. Peterman to get a better view of the monitor. On the monitor, I saw blood dribbling from Peterman's mouth. This was at 3:23. I helped Mrs. Peterman away from the pavilion, sat her in a chair at the side of the parking lot, got her some coffee, and sat with her alone until 3:53, when some other people, Dan Buckley among them, came along, broke the news to her, and took charge of her. End of statement.
You are a reporter, Roz Natchman mused. Concise, to the point. What you could see, what you did see. Exact times by your watch. You didn't mention the ghost you saw pass through the talk show set and drive a knife into Peterman's back.
What?
Now, Mr. Fletcher, despite your very complete and, I'm sure, very accurate statement, will you permit some questions?
Sure.
Good of you. You're sure of the exact time?
I'm a reporter. Something happens, I look at my watch. Why were you on location of this filming?
To see Moxie Mooney.
On assignment?
These days I get to make up my own assignments.
From your appearance, I would have taken you for something less than a managing editor.
Didn't you know? Fletch said.
Everyone is something less than a managing editor. Star athletes, heads of state, reporters, chiefs of detectives. You said no one else was in the pavilion except you and Mrs. Peterman. Not even a bartender?
No, we were alone.
Did Mrs. Peterman know you were there?
I don't think so. I wasn't wearing shoes. I'd been told to be quiet during the taping. She was engrossed in watching the monitor.
If she didn't know you were there, to whom was she speaking when she said, "What happened to Steve?" or whatever it was she said?
She said, "What happened to Steve?" Fletch said firmly.
Sorry. I'm used to dealing with less, professional witnesses.
I think Mrs. Peterman was talking to herself. From her tone of voice, I would say she was frightened, alarmed. Which is why I moved over behind her, to see what she was seeing.
Had you ever seen Marjorie Peterman before?
No.
During the time you took her away from the pavilion, got her coffee, sat with her, what did she say?
Nothing, really, just little things like, what's taking so long? Why doesn't someone come and tell me what happened? Oh, yeah, she said she wanted to go in the ambulance with Steve.
So she knew her husband had been wounded, shall we say?
Fletch hesitated.
She may have known in her heart her husband was dead.
He certainly looked dead on the monitor.
Did she say anything to indicate she knew her husband had been dealt with violently, murdered?
Fletch thought.
No, I don't think she said anything more than I've told you. Don't think?
I know. I know she didn't say anything more.
On the foot of the leg crossed over his knee, the moccasin was half off.
Except to identify herself to me as Marge Peterman.
In response to a question?
I had asked her if she was Peterman's wife.
You saw roughly the same thing Marjorie Peterman saw, Mr. Fletcher. What did you think had happened to Peterman?
I was trying to think what could have happened to him. I guess I was thinking he had suffered some kind of an internal hemorrhage, to account for the blood on his lips.
You did not consider the possibility of murder?
No way. The son of a bitch was on television. I hadn't heard a gunshot. Who'd think of anyone sticking a knife into someone else on an open, daylit stage with three cameras running?
That, Mr. Fletcher, said Natchman, looking down at her blotter, is why I've called this meeting. So,
she swiveled her chair sideways to the desk.
You had never seen Marjorie Peterman before, but you did know Stephen Peterman.
Ah, Fletch felt color come to his cheeks. You say that because I called the son of a bitch a son of a bitch.
Yes, Natchman nodded. I could characterize that as a clue of your having a previous personal opinion of the deceased.
I knew him slightly.
How's that?
She turned her head and smiled at him.
I think it's time for another one of your concise statements, Mr. Reporter.
About 9 months ago, he spent a longish weekend at my home in Italy, Cagna, Italy.
Italy? Are you Italian?
I'm a citizen of the United States. Voting age, too.
Is Italy where you got those shorts?
Fletch looked down at his shorts and lifted the hands in his pockets.
They have good pockets. You can carry books in them, notebooks, sandwiches.
Or a knife, she said simply. In most of the clothes these film people are wearing, you couldn't conceal a vulgar thought. So, are you going to tell me why Peterman visited you in Italy? Of course.
Tell me first why you have a house in Italy. I mean, a struggling young reporter, no matter how precise you are. Cagna's on the Italian Riviera, isn't it?
I have a little extra money.
Must be nice to be born rich.
Must be, Fletch said. I wasn't. She waited for a further explanation, but Fletch offered none.
Now, I'd like to know why Peterman visited you at your Italian palace.
He was traveling with Moxie Mooney. She was on a press tour of Europe.
Moxie visited me at my little villa. He was with her. Her eyebrows rose.
So, you knew Moxie Mooney before?
I've always known Moxie Mooney. We were in school together.
Some humble reporter, Natchman commented.
Entertained big movie stars and film producers at his Italian estate. Wait until I tell the guys and gals on the local police beat. They can't even afford to go to the movies twice a week.
You must spell better than they do.
Never mind, Fletch said. They don't like me already.
So on that weekend at your little villa in Italy, who slept with whom?
What a question.
Yes, Natchman said, it's a question. Were Moxie Mooney and Stephen Peterman intimate?
No.
You're making me ask every question, aren't you?
Yes.
Were you and Ms. Mooney intimate?
Sure.
Why sure? Are you and Ms. Mooney lovers?
Off and on.
Off and on.
Chin on hand, elbow on desk blotter, Roz Natchman contemplated what off and on could mean. Finally, she shook her head.
I think you should explain.
Not sure I can.
Try, she said, so the hems of justice will be neat. You see,
Fletch looked at the ceiling. Each time Moxie and I meet, here and there, now and then, we pretend we've never met before. We pretend we're just meeting for the first time. Roz frowned.
No, I don't really see.
Okay.
Would you walk that past me again?
It's simple. Fletch took another long look at the ceiling. We've known each other a long time and well. I suppose we love each other. So each time we meet, we pretend we've never met before. Which is true, you see. We've never really met before. Because people today aren't really the same people they were yesterday or the day before. Every day you're a new person. You have new thoughts, new experiences. You should never meet a person and presume she's the same person she was last week, because she's not. It's just the reality of existence.
I see,
Roz Natchman said, staring at him.
And then you jump into bed together?
Shucks. Fletch lowered his eyelids.
If you two have so much fun together, why don't you stay together?
Oh, no.
Fletch glanced at the tape recorder. You see, we probably can't stand each other. I mean, in reality.
Because you're both much too beautiful, Roz Natchman said, physically.
No, no, Fletch said. Moxie's the most beautiful critter who's ever eaten a French fry.
Has she ever eaten a French fry?
One or two, when she can get them.
She doesn't look like she's ever eaten a French fry.
It's more complex than all that. Maybe it's that we both play the same kind of games. We make a poor audience for each other.
Games.
Natchman had picked up a pencil and was running its point loosely back and forth over a piece of paper.
I wonder what that means.
Why do I feel like I'm sitting in the office of a public school guidance counselor?
The statement you gave when you first came in here, Mr. Fletcher, was factually accurate.
Natchman waved her pencil at the tape recorder.
And a complete lie.
Me? Lie?
No wonder you're such a rich reporter you can live on the Italian Riviera.
I know I flunked mechanical drawing, Ms. Frobisher, Fletch said, but I really want to take auto repair a second year.
You certainly gave the impression you came to Bonita Beach as a reporter to interview Ms. Mooney. You certainly did not volunteer the information that you knew the murder victim or Ms. Mooney, the latter intimately. Is this all part of some game you're playing?
All the information you've elicited from me is irrelevant. I didn't kill anybody.
I wonder if you'd mind leaving that decision to the authorities.
I sure would mind. All I'm saying is that Marge Peterman didn't kill him either. I was with her at the moment Peterman was being murdered.
The truth, Mr. Fletcher, is that no one I've talked with so far on this list testifies to having seen either you or Marge Peterman from shortly after 3 until shortly before 4.
What are you saying?
And I've never known a reporter who can afford a house of any kind on the Italian Riviera.
Fletch said, I write good.
Was Ms. Mooney expecting you today?
Yes.
And what kind of a game is she playing?
She's not playing any kind of a game. You're turning two-penny psychoanalysis into... Let's go on.
Sitting straight at her desk, Natchman referred to some handwritten notes.
At least I'm answering your questions.
Natchman glared at him.
You know what happens to you if you don't.
Yeah, said Fletch. I don't get to take auto repair next semester.
What was your impression of Stephen Peterman when he spent the weekend at your house in Italy?
You're asking for an opinion.
Something tells me you have one.
I do.
What is it?
He was a son of a bitch.
Why do you say that?
Because you asked me.
Why do you characterize Stephen Peterman as a son of a bitch?
He was a nuisance.
Look, Fletch said, the house there is on the beach, above the beach. It's a beach house.
You're losing your conciseness.
People hang around in swimsuits, pasta and fish for supper on the patio, a little wine, music.
You're saying Peterman didn't fit in.
Always in a three-piece suit. He wore a cravat. Wouldn't go on the beach because he didn't want to get sand against his Gucci loafers.
Intolerable behavior.
Always on the telephone, calling Rome, Geneva, Paris, London, New York, Los Angeles, Buenos Aires. I know, I got the phone bill. It would have been cheaper to have had the entire French government for the weekend.
All right, he was an inconsiderate house guest.
Every night he insisted everybody get dressed up and plod through the most expensive cafes, restaurants, nightclubs, casinos on the Riviera.
And you paid?
Every time a bill came, he was on the telephone somewhere.
Okay.
Worse. Every time he saw Moxie, he bothered her with some clause of some contract or some detail of her schedule, ran over the names of people she was to meet in Berlin 2 weeks from then, Brussels, who, what, where, when, why... He never left her alone. She was there to relax.
And play games with you.
You two avoided him?
As much as we could. It's hard to ignore a government in residence.
You played hide and seek with him?
Yeah.
Marjorie Peterman was not with you that weekend, right?
Right.
Where was she?
Fletch shrugged. Home milking her minks, for all I know.
I repeat the question. You have never seen or spoken with Marjorie Peterman before today?
Right. No, never.
You knew the victim, Stephen Peterman, and admit not liking him?
I would never murder anyone over a phone bill. Instead, I just wouldn't pay it. I'd move to Spain.
And you have this complicated love-slash-hate relationship with Moxie Mooney.
Fletch looked at her from under lowered eyelids.
Don't make too much of that.
She looked evenly back at him.
Frankly, Mr. Fletcher, I think you and Ms. Mooney are capable of anything. Together?
She glanced at the tape recorder, at Fletch, and at the typewritten list on her desk.
Okay, Mr. Fletcher. I guess I don't need to tell you not to leave the Fort Myers area.
You don't need to tell me.
Roz Natchman turned off the tape recorder.
Chapter 6. Soaking wet from running through the heavy rain, Fletch slowed at the top of the outside, sheltered stairs when he recognized Frederick Mooney's famous profile. His back to the white, churning Gulf of Mexico, Mooney was sitting alone at a long table on the second floor veranda of a drinks-and-eat place on Bonita Beach. On the table in front of him was a half-empty liter bottle. In his hand was a half-empty glass. Fletch ambled to the bar.
Beer, he said. Don't care what kind?
The bartender had the tight, permanently harassed look of the retired military.
Yeah, Fletch said. Cold.
The bartender put a can of cold beer on the bar.
Some rain, he said,